Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames, and the surrounding area, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area. My co-host for today is Paul Wearson. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Susan. How are you? Today we're going to have a special on the Scandinavian Days activities coming up at Story City this coming weekend. And we're going to talk a lot about what's going on up at the Scandinavian Days. It's the 50th anniversary of Scandinavian Days as a celebration, and we're going to talk a lot about that and what's going to be happening. And today we have some special guests. We have Mike Jensen, who's the mayor of Story City, His Honor Mike Jensen, and we have the Benson brothers, Steve and Barry Benson, who, full disclosure, grew up with me in Story City. And they've published some volumes of poetry. Their latest is called Poems by the Skunk River Valley Boys. And we're gonna talk about not only that volume, but also the idea of being a poet and reminisce a little bit about growing up in the 50s in central Iowa. And it's going to be fun. But first, we want to talk a little bit about what's going to be happening in Scandinavian Days. And Susan, I hope you're going to come up there.
How could I miss it?
Okay, we have a lot of things going on. And Mike, you want to jump in anytime that you want to.
I'll do that.
We have, all kinds of things. Friday, the pie and ice cream social at Grace Church.
Yeah, you don't want to miss that. That's always a big hit.
Well, your parcel, that's your congregation.
It is.
Okay. We have carousel rides. And, of course, we have the... what I really like about Scandinavian Days is Heritage Hall. This is all of the wonderful foods and confections that come from Norway and Sweden and the Danish tradition. And you can go to Heritage Hall and see also rose maling and all of these fine crafts and things that come back to us from the old country. Rose maling is a flowered pattern you see on plates and all this sort of thing. And all the great food... from kringla, krumkaka, kavren, all kinds of great confections from Norway. You can sample that and buy some. And then there are all kinds of bake sales with affiliated organizations like churches. So you can go up there and pack on pounds if you want to. Everything is high calorie and tasty and wonderful. So Heritage Hall runs throughout Friday night and Saturday. You can go into Heritage Hall and purchase all these things, and there's all kinds of crafts going on. This year they have someone who actually burns rose maling into wood. Mm-hmm. That's a new addition there. So it's just going to be a big slice of Norwegian, Swedish, and Danish culture and food.
Good family fun.
It's a family-friendly holiday. The parade is at 10 a.m., and that runs about an hour, doesn't it?
It does. It's always a good parade. You'll enjoy it a lot.
And you can play bingo with the Lions Club. There's a kiddie parade, 6 p.m. on Friday. And the Judge Story theatrical troupe production. That's going to be held on Friday and Saturday. There's a matinee on Sunday.
Right.
It's the Little Shop of Horrors. And that's going to be a great show. It always is. In the time-honored, traditional, wonderful Story Theater on Main Street there, on Broad Street in Story City. And that show will be on Friday and Saturday and Sunday afternoon, I think about 2 o'clock. And then Friday night at 10 p.m. we have the fireworks.
And that's always a great exhibition of fireworks.
It's one of the better ones in central Iowa. They spare no expense in that fireworks enterprise there. So it's we're going to have a disc golf. I see it here.
A disc golf tournament, and that's always very heavily attended.
Is that right?
It is, and it's used every day in the park. That was an Eagle Scout project.
I remember Garrett did that. Yeah, as an Eagle.
And I thought, oh, that'll never go. And boy, was I wrong. It's used every day.
Disc golf.
It is.
Well, we have a disc golf tournament. It's going to be cool. And there's going to be all kinds of other activities going on. And what you really have an opportunity to do there is eat, not only at Heritage Hall, but there'll also be some other food concessions. And, Mike, a lot of this happens in the park, doesn't it?
Yeah, down on, like, Forest Avenue there by the park.
That's where the carousel is located, the famous Story City Carousel.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the activities will be on the North and South Park there. And so it's just a real friendly family holiday. And at 3 p.m. on Saturday is the Bill Riley Talent Show. And young people come from all over the state to compete at that. And Bill Riley Jr. usually likes to host that. Now, last year, he couldn't make it, and I didn't know that. There was a downpour. Remember, Mike? We had a big rainstorm, and I was like a wet dog, and I had to go in and emcee that show.
Well, you can handle that, Paul. You've done a great job doing that before.
Well, so. I could have used a blow dryer that day. I was soaked with rain. But, there's your talent sprouts and your seniors all the way up to 22 years of age. And it's really a great show, the Bill Riley Show. And before that, and that's what we're highlighting today, is the poetry reading by the Benson Brothers. That'll be at 2 o'clock at the Bertha Bartlett Library in Story City. And, Mike, you might give us a little background on that. And we've done that before there. They've written several volumes. So update us on that.
Well, their first book of poetry, we had a reading and book signing there, and we weren't sure how many were going to show up. And I think we set up like 25 chairs, and I think we ended up setting up about 80 because it was packed and everybody enjoyed it. And we've kind of talked them into writing another book now, which we're going to highlight today. And I'm hoping to have that many there. Fran Kenny, which was the president of Jacksonville University, is coming back for this. So.
Yeah, and she is the daughter of Bertha Bartlett,
for whom the library was named for. That's right. And so you better show up because your name's probably in some of these poems and see what the boys have written about you.
Yeah, that's right. It's going to be fantastic. And we're going to talk more a little bit later about Scandinavian Days. But I wanted to make sure we got in a good sizable segment on the Benson Brothers. And I want to introduce Steve and Barry Benson, whom I grew up with in the Story City area. And welcome to our program. Steve, how are you?
Thanks, Paul. It's great to be here. And we do go back a long ways. Swimming in the river,
We all go back. And Barry, welcome to you.
Thank you, Paul. Nice to see you again.
He was my age. Barry was... What year did you graduate from Nevada High School?
64.
And then Barry and I are 61. So we're very close. And as a matter of fact, Steve and Barry grew up in Story City. And then the family moved to Nevada. And it was a big loss because Steve is a great athlete. And, two or three years ago, I went to a Roland Story basketball game at Nevada, and they were inducting Steve into the Hall of Fame, for an athlete. And I thought, we could have used that guy. But Roland Story did win that night, I think. Congratulations
Thank
on
you.
Being in the Hall of Fame.
Thanks.
And talk a little bit about how you folks got started in writing poetry and who you are and your vocations and all that sort of thing. It all played in.
Well, Barry is the English major. I'm an art major from UNI, and Barry went to UNI, too, after the Navy. And so we both grew up loving words. Our dad was a painter in Story City. Arnold was his name. And he was always very playful with words. And so that's the basis of writing. We always have enjoyed words. Dylan Thomas said he just fell in love with words. And we did too, just to be goofy and say my brother had accordion lessons in Ames. And my dad and I would sit out and wait for Barry to get done with his lessons, and Dad would make up stories and poems and funny things.
He just had that gift.
Well, I guess so. I guess so. And Barry can tell you about Joe Bill Nouse from Story City worked with our dad and overheard him say something once. Remember that poem that Dad was quoting?
Right. He had quoted poems from memory, and it just shocked us to hear that. We grew up loving words, but we didn't. And he did always read a lot of newspaper. And,
mm-hmm. and he was a well-educated man.
Well, high school, yeah. And he was quoting Tennyson's, a poem from Tennyson, Joe Bill Nouse said. So that was a big shock to us. We asked our mom, did Dad used to write and read a lot? Yeah, but I took care of that. He couldn't read too much because he had to do a lot of work around the house. I get that from my wife, too.
So you've had a career of teaching art at the high school level?
Yes, 30 years for art teaching, yes.
And then, Barry, you were instructor at Dowling High School.
And after that, DMAC for 10 years.
Right.
And my first teaching job was in Olwine, north East Iowa for 5 years.
Now, when did you actually get involved in writing poetry seriously?
Well, I remember in grade school, I used to love to read. Whenever we'd have a writing assignment, the teacher would ask who would like to read their piece to the class, and I would always raise my hand, and my athletic friends would always wonder, why do you do that? And I always just loved words and tried to get everybody's name in our class. I'd write a story and try to involve everybody in our class. I just enjoyed entertaining and being part of that.
But this is something, when did you realize that you both shared this gift?
Oh, boy. Well, in high school, I had a teacher that encouraged me to write, and Barry was always writing. Even from the Navy, he would write. But just to give you an example, there was a contest, and my high school English teacher, Kathy Winters, a real cutie, had a little pixie haircut, really, really friendly and
That's
fun.
That's a motivator, too.
It was. She was single, about 25. And we junior and senior boys really liked her class a lot, so she had me write some poems. But before her, the one poem I remember, my first one writing, was called A Footstool's Lot. A footstool's lot is not much of a lot, I thought. All through the day it sits so serene, holding up feet, smelly or clean. And that is the poem I remember. That's the first. That's it. It's gotten better since then, a lot better. Barry has a master's in English, so whenever we give a reading and someone asks a technical question, I say, "Well, Barry has to answer that because I'm an art teacher." So, but we just love words. So, how about you?
Yeah, after high school, I went into the Navy with my friend from Nevada, a lot of Mike's friends from Story City went to.
Yeah, there
about
was
seven or eight of you, Mike?
Seven of us went in at the same time. It was kind of when Vietnam was going, the same time when you went in. So.
And I would write a lot. I would send letters to friends and to Steve, and I would just write poems, description. When I was up in Alaska, ADAC, I would write about being stationed where Japanese naval people had occupied the area there, and we would find these little floating glass fishnet balls, and it was just, I enjoyed writing about that place to remember it and to send it to Steve and our friends so they would experience what I was experiencing.
Well, now, how did this meld into what's going on today, where you're actually co-producing these volumes of poetry?
Well, you're exaggerating, Paul. We don't have real volumes.
Two
books.
There's quite a volume of poetry split among a couple of
literary journals, especially. Yeah. We have many, many literary journals. But,
yes.
Actually, two books, as Mike said. Our first book was 2009, I believe. Mm-hmm. And Mike kept encouraging us to write more and more, and so we have our second full-length book now.
So then you've been published a lot in journals of poetry.
Steve, I think these guys had some published in Christian Science Monitor for years.
I had 20 in Christian Science Monitor. Yeah, it's tough, Paul. The North American Review in Cedar Falls is celebrating their 200th anniversary. One of their favorite readers on the jacket of the back of the magazine is Thomas Jefferson used to read it, the North American Review, and they get over 20,000 poems a year, and they publish, I don't know, 150 maybe. The New Yorker gets 50,000 poems a year, and they publish 125.
Wow.
My wife never realized it was that competitive, but sports is competitive, and I love the competition. Barry and I gave a reading in Hastings, Nebraska, and there were PhDs serving us coffee and tea and crumpets.
Is that right?
Not crumpets. That's English. But and I'm going, I have a BA in art, you know. So it's fun to compete with all the professors, really. They're submitting poems, too, and I just got one accepted from Kent State the other day before I came to Ames. And Barry has been in many. We've been in hundreds of literary journals. And that's what you do first. And then editors recognize your name.
So what is poetry, actually? How a lot of people write poetry. Well, I'm just trying to dig down to what separates someone who does this at your level and someone who writes a sonnet for your birthday or something, you know?
Yeah.
What is it about poetry that separates the men from the boys?
You want that one, Barry?
No.
Well, no. That's funny.
Yeah, everybody has their own style of writing. Our friend John Olson, our teammate and classmate, always said, if it doesn't rhyme, it's not poetry. And if you look in these literary journals, by far the majority of poems do not rhyme. You know, we have free verse and blank verse and prose poems and found poems. You know, a beloved recipe could be a poem.
Right. Like in the last page of a book is a Kringla recipe from our aunt Clara Niebe and Mike's wife Patsy.
But you can get Kringla, of course, all weekend
at
the Heritage Hall. Don't forget that.
And a lot of butter to put on them.
Yeah, you have to explain Kringla. It's dough wound into sort of a pretzel-like thing, but it's soft, chewy, and oh, so heavenly. Yeah, we love Kringla. We've been brought up with it.
Yep.
But when it comes down to, you know, the people who make selections for poems, like when you've been published, there must be some real criteria that separates the men from the boys that said, we're going to publish this. What do you think? What do you think that is? What gets you published?
I have a book by Ted Kooser, who was a U.S. Poet Laureate. He grew up in Ames. His dad had a shop right downtown, a women's apparel shop. Kooser went to Iowa State, and he became the first Midwest Poet Laureate in the United States. And he says you have to have freshness candor and humility. There's so much that goes into a really fresh poem, something a little different, your own voice. You have to get your own voice and your own style that they recognize, because there are just thousands of poets out there, amazingly more than you think. I heard one more place that someone said there was about 5,000 poems published, books of poems published.
Really?
In 1 year, which is shocking.
Yeah, it sounds surprising to me, because I perceive poetry as this closed fraternity, you know, rather small. Probably not as important as it was in the 19th century, but that's not true at all, is it?
No. The two brothers that wrote, who was the poet that?
Tennyson.
That was Tennyson, yeah. Tennyson and his brother did it in 1828 first. That's kind of how we got an idea to do this, too, that they had done it earlier.
Well, now, we did ask you to select some of the things that you've written, and this is probably from your new book, let's look at the cover again. Mm-hmm. Wow, the poems by the Skunk River Valley Boys.
Yeah, that was Mike Jensen's idea, the mayor.
Mike, did you do that? I didn't see you as a literary person.
They were looking for
a
title.
He took the cover picture, everybody.
Yes,
took the cover.
All the photos.
In fact, if you look through the book, there are about 8 pictures that Mike took of the swinging bridge, and we feel close to that. Swinging bridge.
A swinging bridge. See, that's a WPA project.
1936.
It's still the centerpiece of the South Park. And boys have dived off that bridge for...
Still are. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, that's funny. Ted Kooser, in the book, I quote him as saying, a metaphor is a bridge. You know? And we just love that bridge. It means so much to us.
Well, Steve, I'd invite you to favor us with a piece of your work.
Well, this is called Mike and Mike. It's about Mike Jensen and Mike Nordin, my best friend. And story was Randall Nordin, and his brother Mike was Barry's best friend. And unfortunately, Mike was killed in a tragic accident going to Belmont to the races with several other boys. And Mike would have gone, but he went. Had a date with Patsy instead.
And he married Patsy.
And three of them died.
She saved your life. Everyone
she did.
In the car
she
was
did.
Killed.
She many saved
times,
my life.
Not just then.
And our first cousin, Virgin Beau, died, was thrown from the car. Anyway, we were having lunch with Mike in the old Pioneer?
It was Ed Blackburn's Jack Spratt grocery store.
Okay, and it's a restaurant now.
It is a restaurant, Dinners by Dawn.
Yeah, and we were sitting there eating, and Mike said, oh, look, I can see our footprints on the floor. I said, whose footprints? He said, Mike and Mike's. So that's the name of the poem, Mike and Mike.
Well, a little history on that if you want. Mike Nordine lived just south of that grocery store, and that was our shortcut uptown. We'd go through the back door of Ed Blackburn's grocery store to Main Street. Well, Ed, every time we'd go through, he'd have some bananas that he'd sorted out that were just a little overripe, maybe, or an apple. Oh, you boys take one on your way through. Mike and Mike, they look alike. He always said that. So,
all right, summer. Small town. When two boys ditch their shared bike to take a shortcut from alley to broad main street's old-fashioned bricks through a vintage general store, the generous Norwegian grocer enjoyed reciting these lines. Mike and Mike ride a bike. Take a banana if you'd like. They chose the shortcut and banana every day until time retired the kind man's daily rhyme. Then one Mike unexpectedly peeled away after a car crash. At 21, when two bumpers locked, racing to the races. No time to say goodbye. No time to study that sudden learning curve. The other Mike is now the popular mayor, cruising along at 70, enjoying lunch in a new cafe in the same remodeled store with its original punch tin ceiling and age-darkened floorboards. He digs his spoon into a bowl of red jello with sliced bananas that remind him of the Norwegian immigrant's rhyme, Mike and Mike, ride a bike, take a banana if you'd like. Remembering two sets of footprints crossing those wide historical boards, he glimpses the missing Mike, waving, fading, as the waitress waits beside his table. Did she say something? Would you like anything else, Mike? He looks up at her. More time, if you don't mind. Sure, take all day if you want, Mr. Mayor. Smiling, she rushes off to help another customer. But this Mike is not thinking about dessert.
Yeah, very moving.
Mm-hmm.
When you know the context, it was in August of 64, and these boys that we knew were killed in this car accident on the way to Belmont to see the races. And it was a very big shock for the community. Three boys buried in one day. They were in their early 20s. They were back from the Navy. And I was running the radio station at Luther College in Decorah. Mm-hmm. And I had just gotten enough radio experience to rip the teletype page off the machine and read it without rehearsal. So I did the national news. Then I began the Iowa news. And the lead story were my friends who'd been killed on the highway.
Oh.
And I found out about it as I read it on the air. Think of the shock for me, you know. And then that's the kind of sort of seminal experience that I see births the whole idea of writing a poem.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a verity there, a truth, a genuine memory, and people that you want to enshrine and give life beyond their mortal life. And that's what you've done in that poem, Steve.
Oh, that's well put. That's eloquent, yeah. Mike.
I mean,
that's actually.
I think that's pretty good.
Paul.
Thank you.
Yeah,
be said you're eloquent from a poet.
Yeah, well,
it doesn't get any better than
that. That's very good, Paul. Thanks.
And Barry, your turn, Barry Benson. And if you could read a selection that you want to share with us, that would be kind of you, too.
This poem is about Rosendale, which is a general store. Country store about 5 miles west of Story City, and a lot of our relatives lived in that area, and that's what this poem is about. And this is just one story from that time. Big news from Rosendale that never made the front page. This might have happened in the Rosendale village vicinity, 5 miles west of Story City, where early Norwegian settlers, some from homeland areas near Stavanger and Rosendal, recreated a Norse settlement with family names, names so familiar to many of us today. Bo, Dewey, Dyvig, Freda, Gertsen, Hokus, Henriksen, Hoverstein, Jacobson, Johnson, Larsen, Lund, Olsen, Umvig, Oppedal, Olsensen, Peter, Peterson, Quam, Sansgaard, Satry, Shea, Sunna, Tighe, Tesdal, Thompson, Thorsen, Tungesvig, the last family that ran the general store. So, yes, that was the setting maybe 50 or 60 years ago when at least four individuals well known to us expressed the possibility of a craft or beings from another place who may have touched down temporarily near our Rosendale, Iowa settlement, which remains today only in our memories. First, from our cousin Mildred Owenson Bow, I heard an unusual explosion during a wild electrical storm and figured it was a clap of thunder or something getting hit by lightning. At daybreak, we went out to check. The markings in the cornfield looked like a spacecraft had landed and burned its pattern with fire and all colors of chemicals underneath. You could see where the suction cup-shaped legs of craft set down. And then from Bo's neighbor, Marvin Kokemiller, when I saw the markings and heard firsthand reports of sounds, bright flashes, and colors in the cornfield, I figured it could be some experimental, top-secret weapon or aircraft or advanced design, maybe of our own. Then from neighboring farmer Miff Romsey, this patch of ground looked like something big, very hot, had sat itself down in that cornfield. Today, our double cousin, Elaine Olson, quotes Mervyn Tighe, who lived nearby this site for years, and said, "The corn was green, but it was burned in a cone shape." Some say lightning, or maybe lightning striking a windmill. Anyway, it's a good story. And then he said, "People will believe what they want to believe."
Yes, and the aliens come to small town Iowa. It's time for a station break. That's part of radio, you know. I'm going to turn that over to Susan Franson, my co-host.
This is radio station KHOI Community Radio, and you're listening to Local Talk, which is featuring Scandinavian Days today. And Scandinavian Days, I believe you have mentioned, is coming up this weekend, Friday, 6th Saturday, 7th Sunday, and there are events all days, as you've heard a little earlier. And this is inspired by, at least, Scandinavian culture. And I have a question from reading the article in the Story City Herald last week about the 10th anniversary and what they did during the 10th anniversary of Scandinavian Days. This is the 50th, actually, I believe. 50th. So this is a real big year, half century. But in that 10th anniversary parade, they had people marching in their Scandinavian Norwegian costumes.
That's correct.
Do you still do that?
The wife and I, we wear ours, and there's a few others, but there's not very many around anymore. I don't know why. I think it's just the people have gotten older and passed on, and the younger haven't picked up the tradition. We used to have two clothing stores that sold those vests and the shirts and ties and stuff that we wear. And Patsy and I, we've always just wore ours to the celebration. I think it adds a little bit.
Well, I would think so. And I thought, I bet that they don't do that anymore, and it's too bad. But yeah. So a few people do it. Anyhow.
A few, yes.
And you march in the parade with it.
Yes.
Yes. And
don't march. I ride in a car.
People our age are beyond marching. Hey, but we do have the kids doing the folk dance, and they're dressed in native costumes. So you have and someone takes the time to teach them this old Norwegian folk dance, and they do that right out in the middle of the main, Broad Street, on Friday night, I believe. And there's a kiddie parade on Friday night.
That's
too.
Correct.
But it is cute to see these little Norwegian people do these fantastic folk dances that go way, way back, probably.
The Benson brothers, of course, are our featured guests today, and at the Scandinavian Days, you must also be Scandinavian.
Yes, yeah. Both grandfather, great grandfathers came over from Norway. Emil Benson left a family over there and came over here and gave up his citizenship to the King of Sweden in Norway. We have that piece of paper still. So, yeah, we're 100%. Norsky, I have to admit it.
Yes. Well, obviously, both of you have
yes.
the same grandfather.
Yeah, right.
This is making sense now.
Right. Yeah.
And just incidentally, in terms of my part of the program, I have a recording from last year's Scandinavian Days. Our program was the week after. So we went there, and we heard a lot of people at the race.
and I thought maybe we'd announce the race. I didn't catch that in your...
Oh, the 5K.
Yes,
yeah, that's on Saturday morning, I believe.
It is.
Saturday morning. Well, we
get a lot of people there, don't we?
Yeah, they do. They have an awful lot, young and old both.
And the other things that I recorded, and if we have time, we might play from last year's, were members of the station who were there observing and recording different programs. Richard Morrison Jr., who's our engineer when Becca isn't here, and he's the engineer for the whole station, not just for this program. But Richard Morrison Sr. had a booth at the Scandinavian Days last year, and they met out in front of the Hall of the Sons of Norway. Mm-hmm. So I thought we might play a little bit of that. And then a very, very Norwegian activity. Maybe the contest isn't Norwegian, but I know in America you just have a little bit of competition, even in poetry, as you know. The Kumla eating contest was the most fun recorded bit because people were so excited about it, and they talked about Norwegian food and how much they like Norwegian food, or at least how traditional it was.
Yeah, well, we went to Norway, Barry and I don't know how many years ago it was, 8, 9 years ago, looking forward to some kringla, you know, in Norway. We got there and couldn't find a kringla anywhere in Oslo. No kringla. We asked, what's the deal? Oh, that's the American. Americans want their kringla. We have it around Christmas. That's about it. I said, what? Came all the way for kringla. Couldn't get any in Norway.
I think they call it the poor man's biscuit in Norway.
I suppose, yeah.
Well, Mace, I tell you something about the immigrants.
I couldn't believe it.
I think the Americans have softened it up, put a little sweetening in it. It's a little better.
Yeah. Lefse either. No lefse. No.
But you still eat lutefisk.
Oh, not me.
When I first came to Ames in 1963, you could buy dried lutefisk in... Oof. Fairway.
It has lye. For those of you that don't know, there's lye in lutefisk, which you wash clothes with back in Norway. What's the deal with that?
But we also had the Kumla eating contest, and the Kumla eating contest is really for people who are not faint of heart because a Kumla is heavy food. Let me tell you what it is. I used to help Mom make it. I would take, she'd slice up raw potatoes, I'd grind them in a meat grinder, it went into a cake pan. She made it into balls with some sort of adhesive like oatmeal. And you put it in with ham or a brisket and cook it for hours. And then you come out with this dumpling type thing, which is a kumla. And you put it on your plate and you have ham or whatever you cooked it with too. But the kumla balls themselves are just like dropping a cannonball into your stomach. And so a kumla eating contest, I think only John Wayne could really be successful. But we did have some people who were in the kumla eating contest, and that's what the next segment's about. Just keep in mind that Norwegian food is usually white, usually tasteless, or lutefisk is another thing that smells terrible. I've always thought that Norwegians invented Norwegian's food because they were trapped in a log cabin for 8 months every year. it's all an acquired taste. But our next segment does involve the Kumla Eating Contest.
This is Cynthia McClure, and I'm with the organizer and the MC of the Kumla Eating Contest here in Story City.
Yep. My name is Becky Watoon. I'm the organizer of the Kumla Eating Contest for Scandinavian Days. This year, we are inside the Story City Legion Post 59, where the Sons of the Legion had a couple of volunteers make us a couple of roasters full of delicious kumla. We have two divisions. We have an adult division, which is 16 and older. We have a youth division, which is 0 to 15. Looks like we've got a full docket for 10 competitors in the adult division, and we've got 3 signed up for the youth. And every person starts out with 5 kumlas on their plate. The adults get 3 minutes to consume as many as they can. We load up their plates with more once they finish their first 5. It's pretty fun. If you've never had kumla before, it's definitely a Norwegian treat that you need to try.
And it is, this is the MC for the event, and your name?
Hi, my name is John Gukin. I'm a lifelong resident of Story City.
Can you just give us a little notice about it?
It's like a very dense, dumpling. It's potatoes and flour all boiled in ham with ham. It's very thick. It kind of sits in your stomach. Once you eat it, it just kind of boom. It's like eating two bowls of pasta and then laying down. It's pretty tough, but I tell you what, we got an exciting crowd here today. There's a lot of young people from Riverside Bible Camp, the counselors. They're here, and I think there's going to be a little bragging rights for who can eat the most kumla today.
Who likes kumla? Woo! Who loves kumla? Yeah! All right, kumla eating contest. We've got 23 people signed up, two classes. Youth, semi-adults, okay, and we shall see. And these are made by the local legion here, and they do a good job. They have kumla feeds all the time.
Okay.
All right, so all these guys are going to need a lot of encouragement.
Wait.
Oh, not yet. Not yet.
Are you ready?
When they yell at you,
are we ready?
Go.
Okay. Yeah. Set. I like that. Yeah. Go! Eat kumla!
Oh, my God. These guys are packing it away.
Okay, and that was the kumla eating contest last year. Are you going to have another one this year?
Yes, they are. Saturday, let's see what time it is, 12:30 to 1, and that'll be down at the band shell in the North Park.
So, and you're going to have good weather this year, right?
Well, we're going to ask everybody here to say a little prayer for good weather. So,
because a lot of last year's program dealt with just how terrible the weather was starting out with Paul's saga of going to the talent show and emceeing it in his soggy condition. I think we have time for maybe another poem or two. Is that right?
Okay.
Ready?
Yeah, sure. That sounds good. I'd like to read one about my father, who was a painter in Story City. He'd be surprised that this was published in the South Carolina Review, a long way from Story City. I like the stories we grew up with and people we know get distributed all over America in the literary journals that we're in. This is called My Father's Silver Dollars. When he finished the houses he painted in small towns where he lived, he loved to take his speckled hammer and sharp three-penny nails up the ladder with silver dollars in his khaki slacks. Under the highest peaks, he nailed those proud coins where the projecting roof saved them from bad weather. It's how he signed his work. Sun still strikes those proofs of what he thought he was worth. I hope there's some left. I don't know. Joe Bill told us that he saw a few still.
I think there's still one, Steve, up in the high steeple of the Bethel Church.
Oh, really?
I'm pretty sure they're still there.
Oh, that's great.
So this was his segment, his way of signing his work as
yes,
an artist.
Yeah.
And some of that still survives today. It's a beautiful poem.
Yeah, thanks.
I'd just like to mention for those who just tuned in that that was Steve Benson, one of the two poets who's going to be reading at the Bertha Bartlett Library at 2 o'clock on Saturday. And I believe his brother Barry, do you have a poem also you'd like to read?
Oh, we both have many poems to read.
We could go on all day.
Yeah. Yes, right. This poem is titled One Sandwich Only at Phil Peterson's Funeral. Traveling back to my Story City hometown for a funeral for Phil Peterson, high school hero, passed at 77, following a 10-day illness, taps echo three-note riffs as part of the presentation of the flag for 2 years military service in Germany after all state honors in high school basketball, football, MVP recognition at Waldorf College, followed by a 38-year career as truck driver for hog buyer for Farmland Foods. Standing in line for the church basement brunch, I recognize middle school teammates, Tom Peterson, his 7-foot son, and Joe Bill Naus and Kathy. And we all recall our now-raised Peterson Horse Ranch when my 86-year-old second cousin Lorraine frantically waves me to her table. When conversation seems to halt, the woman beside her, Solveig Stoll Tweet, says to me, "I was your teacher." I look, pause, and have to say, "You don't look old enough to be my teacher." She takes my hand, recalling. I continue, didn't you ask me to stay after school once and sing Beautiful Brown Eyes, I'll Never Love Blue Eyes Again? No, she says. She turns. I quickly reply, maybe it was Barbara Jacobson Doolittle or Ramona Erickson. Solveig says, Barbara died last year. We pause for Barbara's passing for best friends, lost, relatives, classmates, stories. Later across the room as I look through photos for our confirmation class, now 60 years, I notice Esther Wicks approaching. She asks, do you remember our Emmanuel Lutheran Church school class? Yes, I stumble. You said you'd never be satisfied until you saw me in the pulpit. Esther smiles and replies, yes, and of course, when our good friend Doris Jewell heard that, she said, I have a hard time with that picture. Cousin Kenny Freddy approaches, remarks on the turnout, reads the note near the food tray, one sandwich only. We all agree Phil would have laughed at that. And I add, he was always telling us good stories every time we saw him. Much later, physically alone in the narthex, the nave, I walk down the aisle, step into the high, imposing pulpit, and read to those rows of unseen souls and spirits the first draft for this poem and prayer for Phil Peterson.
Oh, very good. And I knew Phil, too.
I know you did.
You know, this sounds like Story City, but really it's Americana. When you rattle off all those names, when you talk about church and school, these are the building blocks of small-town America, and by extension, America itself. That's why your poetry resonates so beautifully, because everyone can identify with that growing up experience. Whether you grew up in the 50s or you're growing up now, these are things that really amalgamate America. They're the glue that holds us together. They're what we have in common with each other. And I think that's why your poetry resonates so well. And I think that's why Scandinavian days and festivals like it. You know, Susan and I do road trips all over this area. And every town has its festival. Every town has its heritage. Every town has its pride and its school and its churches. And so your poetry is really singing about things that we all know, love, and understand. That's why it's so important. Such a high calling. And so impactful to listen to. So moving to listen to. We might have time for one more brief reading from each of you. I'm just really enjoying this, and I think that when we listen to this poetry, it's actually music from a small town, from all those things we grew up with, and it has to resonate with so many people out there listening today.
Well, thanks, Paul. Well, again, well put. You're a poet. You just
I don't know about
you, you haven't published those, maybe, but thank you. This is called Sunny. It's from my first cousin. His last name is Hocus. Lived west of Story City, where all of our aunts and uncles lived, and we stayed with him on the farm every summer. This is Oliva. She died in Bethany Manor, as my mom did, of Alzheimer's, and so many of our relatives have died there. But I talked to her in Bethany Manor before she died. She made the best kringla, except for Patsy Jensen, of course. Absolutely perfect kringla. So this is called Sunny. For Harris Hocus, seized by the day, he fell under a harrow, and his mother, looking through their kitchen window, saw the way Sunny's tractor turned circles by itself in the field and found herself outside with apron flying, racing down the long, curving, wrinkled, narrow lane, past the mute mailbox, across the loose gravel road, into the weedy ditch, then jumping the wire fence, never remembering killing the chugging, puffing, brainless tractor's powerful engine, reaching her only son, still in his 20s and engaged to marry the gentle neighbor girl who lived only two farms to the north, in time to hold him and smooth his dark, soft hair goodbye, his damaged head marked for sacrifice by rich, clean Iowa topsoil, until he closed his clear eyes with his face resting in her lap once again, and a red-winged blackbird on a fence post calling in the quiet, sunny field as a mother's tears drop like the longed-for moisture the crops so desperately needed that hot, dry year. Sonny's sister was in the audience when I read that poem. on our last reading in Story City, and I looked over, and tears were just pouring down her face when I read that poem.
Yeah, the newspaper story would say, young man dives in farming accident.
Right.
But look how you've made that music and meaningful by the words you chose to say that.
Thanks.
Barry, maybe we have time for one more from you, too. These are the Benson brothers, everybody, natives of Story City, who have their more recent volume of poetry is called Poems by the Skunk River Valley Boys, and they will be doing a poetry reading at 2 p.m. at the Bertha Bartlett Public Library in Story City as part of Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Scandinavian Day is coming up in Story City. We want to see you all there. And Barry Benson, it's time for you to make vocal music here.
Thank you, Paul. This one's about growing old. We're in our 70s now, and this kind of sums up what happens as you age. It's titled Sciatic Lesson. As a couple names here I have included in the poem. First definition of sciatic is pain along the nerve in the lower back, the hip, the buttocks, the thigh, the calf, the foot. He inches across the new parking lot, sciatic hobbled at 60, the same sprinter who anchored the Ankeny relays 4x100, one of the stories he loves to tell, unable now to dodge approaching cars, possibly caused by a herniated disc, probably not a tumor, clotter cancer, reports Dr. Shirk, who isn't sure, as the former 155-pounder wonders what happened to Coach Winfrey's spinback, struggles to sidestep a shopping cart. Was it from bending over graves, blurred dates, names, listening later to voices from night cries, from codeine dream terrors, tossing, vowing, next time I'll dive for those first down markers, says Dr. Shirk, there's really nothing I can do. After 30 or childbirth, affirms his wife, women often experience this. It's not unusual. Dr. Shirk, after mallet non-response from ankle, big toe, notes, losing traction from bottom of left hip, and prescribes return in 7 to 10 days and adds, it usually takes about a month, then goes away. How can this happen? It won't compute. With that 70-yard touchdown run around left sweep blocks from Olson, Bob Moore, Mike Jensen, Joe Bill, those not so many years ago, his sons and daughters know these stories now all too well.
Wow. And we are getting older, some of us, that's for sure. Well, the Benson brothers, Barry and Steve, thanks for being with us today. It's been delightful. And Mike Jensen, our mayor at Story City, thank you for being with us also. Just wanted to highlight some of the great things happening coming up at Scandinavian Days on Saturday and Sunday. And Friday night's the Kitty Parade and all these good things that are happening. You can ride the carousel, our traditional attraction at Story City.
This is KHOI.
89.1. Susan Franson and I have been hosting Story City Mayor Mike Jensen and the 50th anniversary observance for the Scandinavian Days is coming up this weekend, June 5th, 6th, and 7th.
And today we've been specially honored with the Benson brothers. That's Barry and Steve Benson, featured guests at the program and at their reading on 2 o'clock on Saturday at the Bertha Bartlett Library. And you've also heard from Cynthia McClure, John Gookin, and Becky Watoon from the Kumla Eating Contest last year. And unfortunately, we had to leave Richard Morrison Sr. and Richard Morrison Jr. standing in front of the Sons of Norway. Well, we've had some more poetry.
Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
This show was engineered by Rebecca Reiter. Like all our KHOI programs, Local Talk is now streaming live at khoifm.org. You can also link to our programs from our webpage, where there will be links to the individuals and organizations mentioned on our show. You could probably get the whole schedule for Scandinavian Days.
Now, your support as a listener or as a contributor is what makes KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and
see you again on the radio. Now, we'll play from the prelude of The Little Shop of Horrors.
The big show.
That's the big show. The comedy horror rock musical.
21st day of the month of September. In an early year of a decade not too long before our own, the human race suddenly encountered a deadly threat to its very existence. And this terrifying enemy surfaced, as such enemies often do, in the seemingly most innocent and unlikely of places.
Take my Kleenex, wipe that lipstick away. Show me your face, clean as the morning. I know things were bad, but now they're okay. Suddenly Seymour is standing beside you. You don't need no makeup. Don't have to pretend. Suddenly Seymour is here to provide you sweet understanding. Seymour's your friend.
Nobody ever treated me kindly. Daddy left early. Mama was poor. I'd meet a man and I'd follow him blindly. He'd snap his fingers. Me, I'd say sure.